Welcome to the fourth episode in the Lessons from Award-Winning Publisher Podcast series from Media Voices. I'm Peter Houston, and in this series, I'm setting out to learn all I can about making successful podcasts from the winners of the Publisher Podcast Awards 2020. We're now accepting entries for this year's awards. Stick around and I'll tell you where to get more information about entering. But first, in this episode, I'm learning from Dave Musgrove, publisher at Immediate Media and host of the History Extra podcast, which won the Specialist Podcast category at this year's awards in March. The History Extra podcast is one of our longest running winners, launching over 13 years ago. Weekly, it complements a range of BBC History magazine titles and the History Extra website, all produced by Immediate Media. The first thing I wanted to know from Dave was what was the strategy when he launched the History Extra podcast.
There was no strategy, I'll be honest, because it was a long time ago when we launched this podcast. It was back in June 2007. I remember it quite distinctly. I was editing BBC History magazine, which was kind of the print brand from which the podcast was launched. And I must have heard someone else do a podcast. They weren't the thing that they are now back then. And I thought, well, that sounds pretty good. And I knew that I was going to be interviewing a fairly famous historian in the next week or so, a chap called Professor Ian Kershaw, who is like a big name in Hitler studies. He's a really famous historian, he's written some brilliant books. So I thought, well, surely I can just record that and make a podcast. I called him on the phone. I remember in our little meeting room in our magazine offices, someone came in halfway through, and I was recording it just on one of those things that you just stuck on the phone. So, you know, this was on a landline. So the quality was abysmal, but it was a really interesting interview, and he had a lot of interesting things to say. And like I said, he's quite a famous guy in the field. So we immediately got lots of people interested in it, and from there we hit it at the right time. We managed to get on iTunes. We got good promotion on iTunes straight away. And suddenly we had lots of people listening to us. And I thought, well, this is brilliant.
But even with that early success, it still took a while to develop a formal podcasting strategy for History Extra.
It was very ad hoc. We did it once a month for a few years, I think. So it wasn't a massive imposition of time or anything like that, but we just saw it growing and growing, and people just kept being interested in it. It wasn't that difficult, and you know, I kept hearing people saying, oh God, that's amazing, how you managed to do this podcast on top of producing a magazine. And it was just like, yeah, I bigged it up and said, yeah, yeah, it's massively hard, this is, but you know, I was just kind of doing it within the constraints of the normal job, really. After a while, we were able to invest in some decent kit, and then a bit further on, we managed to get a podcast editor. I managed to convince the money guys that we should have an actual technician helping us out. And then, you know, after that, we had a studio, and you know, it's gone from there. And then it's become a much bigger part of the entire business. Immediate Media, the bigger publishing company that I work for.
Immediate Media's investment in podcasting has certainly paid off. Three of our 2020 winners came from the business. History Extra was one of the first publications in the portfolio to get involved in podcasting, and Dave says that was maybe something to do with the history market itself.
History podcasting has been a big area of podcasting, I think, from the go. We've seen lots of people doing it, and I think that's part of this whole, you know, people just want to be educated as much as anything else, and it's just a really nice way to do it. We don't make people work too hard when they're listening to it. It's just a conversation with people. And the other thing that I think that was really important, I always wanted to do, was that I just wanted to not do the same interviews that you get on Radio 4 where someone's constantly butting in. It was just like, well, okay, this guy's interesting. He's done decades of research on this. He knows what he's talking about. Let's just let him talk. So I'll ask a simple question, then I'm not going to interrupt halfway through, which maybe means that it's sounded, you know, unedited or as if we didn't know what we're doing, but I guess we didn't really. But it's just allowing someone who really knows their stuff to speak.
The idea of giving interviewees the space to speak comes up regularly among our award winners. Leaving room to find out things you didn't know is important. But as a regular podcast interviewer, I know that guests don't always speak as concisely as you would like them to.
Because of the way we do it, we do need people who can really communicate well, who really can allow their subject to speak in a way that's engaging and interesting. Because our audience, they're not academic historians, our audience, they're just people who have maybe even just a passing interest in history. So we flit around historical subjects from, Roman Britain one week to the Tudors to the Renaissance painters. We're always covering different stuff. So we can't expect our listeners to really know too much about the topic we're talking about. So we need whoever's talking to be able to really get into it. And if we're not really interrogating people or really stopping them and saying move on, then we need people who are naturally good communicators to start with. So that is important to us. Working in the field that we are, history media, history publishing, there has definitely been a trend in the last few years of people who are popular historians getting much more savvy about this. And I don't know if they're all having media training. I suspect they're not. They're probably just listening to their peers doing podcasts and stuff and thinking, well, I need to be able to deliver that. And I think you don't get to publish a popular history book now unless you are able to be a pretty decent communicator, unless you're able to deliver a talk to a popular literary festival or something like that. So they are getting quite honed about it. But on top of that, we do need to have lens. So sometimes we will speak to someone who is practicing academic historian who's not really in the popular sphere, but maybe they've just got a really interesting topic that they've been researching. That then does become a bit more difficult. We have to sort of tee them up a bit and just explain a bit more about what we're trying to do. Maybe that means there's a bit more editing that's required, but I think it's been really important to us, certainly as we've been in the early years of the podcast, to keep the amount of work, editing work particularly, to the barest minimum that we could. Not to be saying, right, this has got to be a super polished product. Allow just a little bit of a conversation to flow in. And I think that's fine. I think that works in a podcast.
With its reliance on expert interviews, does the History Extra podcast turn to the pages of its sister magazines to fill its guest roster? Or does it find its own interviewees?
There's a bit of both. I mean, we don't want it to be a direct reflection or just a regurgitation of what's in the magazine. So if there's someone who's really good in the magazine, then we will tab them up and see if they want to have a chat with us. There's more timely ones. So in the last few weeks, I've been doing a lot of stuff on the Black Death and on the Blitz spirit and stuff like that. It's super popular right now. But we don't do that too much because we are a blend of education and entertainment, I suppose. Getting out of the woes of the world is just as important as understanding the woes of the world. I get quite a lot of leads from Twitter, actually. There's a lot of really active historians on Twitter. If they are on Twitter, then that suggests they have a certain level of popular engagement that might be useful to us. Quite a lot is coming from book publishing as well. People have got new books. Obviously, they're keen to be able to talk about them, and that's always been useful to us.
The podcast's independent attitude to finding good guests doesn't mean it hasn't got strong ties to the print publications.
It's always been produced by the editorial teams, the print editorial teams, so it's always been very closely related in style and tone to the magazines. And its massive benefit has always been as a big marketing tool for us to reach out to new audiences as well as give our existing audiences a slightly different media source for them to enjoy our content. We drop in subscription messages every now and then. We try not to be too heavy-handed about it. And I think, there were maybe a few years where we kind of over-egged it a bit and people got a bit sniffy about it, and I think that's fine. Every now and again we do something, and if there's a really good offer or something we really want to flag up, then we're not afraid to put it in and shout about it. You can't sell any magazines into the States because it's broadly shut. So we used to be pretty big in the States, and we will be again, I'm sure. And a lot of our audience comes from people who've listened to the podcast. So anecdotally, I get a lot of contact from people saying, I listen to your podcast, this is the first time I've heard of your magazine and I really like it, so I chose to subscribe or bought it in Barnes & Noble or whatever. So it's been a massive boon for us there.
It's clear that a podcast can be a strong discovery mechanism for new magazine audiences. But what does the podcast add to the audience experience?
Obviously, there is a difference between the written voice and the spoken voice. And I think you can get a lot out of reading a feature, but even if it's the same person talking about that topic, there will be something extra that they can add to it if they are talking about it as well. And I think also Our readers, they want a bit more, something that's a bit more experiential. And if they can't go to one of our live events, for instance, which we do a few of, this is kind of the next best thing. They're getting to listen to this person who they've enjoyed a feature of, and they are getting a sense of who that person is, as well as the topic they're researching. And I think that is quite important to people, that, you know, they like to know that it's not just a sort of a faceless entity behind the stuff they're reading. They like to know who it is. And also, you know, maybe we'll ask a few more slightly flippant questions or something like that, that that will be a bit more revealing. So I think it does add quite a lot. And if you haven't read the magazine at all, of course, then it's a completely new experience, and we'll be giving you something very different.
So there's room to be a little more flippant in the podcast, hopefully revealing the personalities behind the names. And the podcast is the next best thing to History Extra's live events. And Dave explained what it is that makes those so special.
Live events is a thing we started a little while ago, and we do put out talks from our live events sometimes. I'm not sure how effective they are as a podcast stream. So basically we do, I don't know, a few weekends a year where basically we just convene a load of historians and they do some interesting talks, and we have paying audiences come and listen into that, and they tend to be really, really good and really, really you get a really engaged audience there, and a lot of them will have heard of us from the podcast, some from the magazine, some from our other media strands. But what we've not done, which is an interesting thing, and I see a lot of people are doing, is gone the other way and saying we're going to do a podcast live, which I wouldn't rule out. And when we're allowed to go back into the world, that's an interesting idea to sort of move the brand back into the live sphere. And that could work for us.
The early days of recording the History Extra podcast were described by Dave as less than perfect. These days, the show's recording setup is significantly more sophisticated, not least to support recording on location.
We did have big problems back in the start, that our audio quality was pretty variable, basically because, you know, I was trying to do it and I, you know, didn't know what I was up to. But once we got some proper experts on board, we've been good. I've got a couple of guys who are reporting into me who are specifically podcast producers. We've got our own studio set up with standard recording kit in there. We do quite a lot of our podcasts are out and about. So particularly for history, we'll often be going to historians' houses or to museums or things like that. We don't tend to do so much by way of, like, you know, live walking around a castle with a historian type thing. I don't think we're quite, you know, good enough in terms of outside broadcast to pull that off. We will often record our conversations in someone else's study. So we have the portable kits that we can take and do that. One of the things that is quite interesting, I find, is when you're talking about book publishers or talking to people who've got a book out being published by the bigger publishers, a lot of those publishing houses in central London now will have podcast recording studios in their offices or within their PR departments. So quite often you can find that you can get decent quality audio out of that. Also, we'll be, you know, working with universities, and they often have recording studios now. I did one down in the University of Exeter the other day, and they've got a full-on recording studio up there. Ditto in Nottingham Trent University. I was at the other day as well. And yeah, so doing recordings in proper studios.
Visiting historians in their own homes or in museums or in universities has not been possible through lockdown. So how has History Extra dealt with recording through the restrictions placed upon us by the pandemic?
We've worked out quite a nice system of, we send out mics to the recorders to interviewees. We're sort of getting them couriered out there and then recording sort of free way. So they record, I record, and then I record on a conversation over the voice over IP on the computer as well. So we kind of got free recordings that were then spliced together, which gives us pretty decent audio. Wasn't my idea, it was my podcast guys who came up with it, but it seems to work.
With more than a decade's podcasting experience under his belt, I asked Dave what his advice would be for a publisher starting a new podcast.
I think the important thing is definitely you've got to commit to doing it. There's no point just doing one and then say, that didn't really work, or it was really hard work, or just, you know, it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. You've got to commit to doing it for either a season, like I was saying, or for, you know, to say we're definitely going to do it every week, every fortnight, whatever, establish some frequency and commit to doing it. You need to give it some time to grow and to find its voice. If you're coming at it from a print perspective, then I think you might need to moderate your expectations a bit about what you're able to do. Just deliver something that fits in with your editorial brand values. If you've got people who are up for doing a round table type thing, then go with that. If you've got people who you think you could interview, then go with that. But just make sure that whatever it is, you can actually do it on a regular basis without it being a massive imposition on your working day.
So many lessons to learn from a decade plus of the History Extra podcast. But if I was to choose my key takeaways from talking to Dave, I would say allowing guests the space to speak is important, but if you can, choose guests that are naturally good communicators. Podcasts are a strong discovery mechanism for potential print subscribers. The spoken word delivers something extra and experiential for your audience. Live events may not work as podcasts, but they can be fantastically engaging for your audience and deliver revenue. If you can, get expert help. And finally, commit. Give your podcast the time to grow, to find its voice, and make sure you choose a format that you can deliver on a regular basis. A massive thanks to Immediate Media's Dave Musgrove for sharing the expertise he has gained from his work starting and running the History Extra podcast. In the next episode in this lesson series, I'll be learning from another award-winning Immediate Media podcaster, Janine Ratcliffe from Olive Magazine. We are now accepting entries for the Publisher Podcast Awards 2021. The deadline for submissions is Friday, November the 27th, 2020. For more information on how to enter and to see our expanded category list, go to publisherpodcastawards.com.